John Sawat once commented on how there are people who don't like the Buddha's emphasis on suffering and stress. They complain that it's pessimistic. But, as he said, you look at people's behavior. Everybody's looking for happiness, which shows that they're suffering. And so the Buddha is providing us with something we need, guidance in our search for happiness. I was teaching up in Canada a couple years back, and I happened to mention that the Buddha said that the search for happiness is a good thing. And someone in the audience came up afterward and said she was surprised to hear that, and I was surprised that she was surprised. But then you look around and listen, and you find there are a lot of people who say that the thing that's keeping us from being happy is the fact that we're searching for happiness. We gave up on the search, happiness would come. It's like a cat. You go chasing after a cat, the cat runs away. You sit down, make a lap, the cat will come. But that's playing games with happiness. Now, maybe one of the reasons we think we shouldn't be playing games with happiness is it sounds like it's fun. And if you search for happiness, you're taking it too seriously, and that takes some of the joy out of the happiness. It's part of the mind that likes the element of serendipity in happiness, the sense that it came without you having to do anything to earn it. But that may be because we've searched for happiness in the past and haven't been satisfied, and feel that happiness is playing games with us, so we might as well play games with it. But suppose there were a path that really led to an unending happiness. Wouldn't that change things? That's precisely what the Buddha offers. He was the sort of person who did take happiness seriously. After all, it's what we want most in life. Instead of taking a cavalier attitude toward it, he said he wanted to study it, understand it, think it through. Explore. Try different approaches. And we admire this in people who, say, are scientists, researchers. But somehow, when we apply that same approach to happiness, it seems cold. But here again, you look at the reward. Happiness is what we want more than anything else. And oftentimes researchers are pursuing things that are total dead ends. But the Buddha found that the path to true happiness is not a dead end. It goes there. So it's not the fact that you're searching for happiness is getting in the way of happiness. It's simply you're searching the wrong way. There is a right way to do it. And it doesn't have to be a selfish endeavor. In fact, if you do it as a selfish endeavor, you're not going to find it. As the Buddha said, if you do it right, you have to develop wisdom and discernment. You have to develop compassion. You have to develop purity. After all, wisdom begins with the question, what when I do it will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? That's two value judgments right there. One is that the search for happiness is a good thing. And the other is that long-term is better than short-term. But there's also wisdom in the realization that it's going to depend on your actions. This is why we have to be heedful, because our actions do make a difference. And because our actions come from the mind, this is why we're here meditating. You have to meditate with a goal in mind. Here again, you get people who say meditation is better when you have no goals. In fact, they pride themselves in the fact that they're doing it without any purpose in mind, without trying to accomplish anything. But that's an act of dishonesty. If you weren't hoping to get something out of it, why would you do it? If you think it's cool to say, well, I'm beyond having a purpose like that, well, that's your purpose then, is so you can show that you're cool. So it's better to be honest. We're here for happiness. And then we look at our actions. Here again, there's a resistance. One of the actions the Buddha says leads to happiness is generosity. And he starts out by saying, give where you feel inspired, which emphasizes the freedom of generosity. But then he talks about how generosity can be skillful and unskillful. Well, there are relative levels of skill, let's put it that way. Some motivations are higher than others. Some ways of giving are better than others. You give with respect. You give with a sense that something good will come of it. That's better than just tossing it away. So if you think about generosity, you're more likely to get happiness out of it. The same with the precepts. If you simply obey them, that's one thing. But if you see that you're living a relatively harmless life, that brings more joy out of the practice of virtue. You see that you're principled, that people could give you rewards for breaking the precepts, but you don't accept the rewards. That gives you a sense of self-esteem, a higher level of happiness. And of course, there's goodwill. Here again, we'd like to think that goodwill is just a spontaneous goodness of the heart. But there are skillful and unskillful ways of developing goodwill. You want to think it through. The unskillful way is to think, well, I expect everybody to be happy because I wish them to be happy. That's not going to happen. I remember after 9/11, when a Buddhist teacher complained that his complacent Buddhist bubble had been broken, thinking that by spreading goodwill to everybody, everybody would be happy to have happiness. Well, there's nothing Buddhist about that attitude. As the Buddha said, you develop goodwill because it's good for you. And as for whether other people are going to be happy or not, ultimately it lies with them. You just want to make sure you don't get in the way. And if there's anything you can do to help, you're happy to help. But as for whether they're actually going to be happy or not, that's going to depend on their actions. You have to think in these ways. Think through what it means to be generous. Think through what it means to be virtuous. Think through what it means to have goodwill for all beings. And you find that you get more happiness out of these activities, these acts of merit. And you realize it's a higher level of happiness, and it's just more happiness, it's a higher level, because it's blameless, harmless. And it teaches you skills. As you come to the breath meditation, as you've been practicing generosity, virtue, goodwill, it's a lot easier to deal with the difficulties that you're going to face. A greater sense of your own competence will see you through a lot of difficulties. And you've learned that if you talk to yourself in the right way about the way you do your practice of generosity, virtue, and goodwill, is going to make a difference. That teaches you to talk to yourself in a good way as you meditate. That direct thought and evaluation. Some people think that when they're going to practice concentration, they have to do something brand new called direct thought and evaluation. Actually, it's what the mind's been doing all the time, as it talks to itself. You direct your thoughts to a topic, and then you pass an evaluation on it. We're taking this habit of the mind. We're using it for a happier purpose. So it's good to be open and above board about the fact that, yes, you are searching for happiness. And be very clear about the fact that the fact that you're searching is not getting in the way. The only thing that's getting in the way is a lack of skill in the search. And that's something that can be overcome. But it does encourage you to be more observant, to be more reflective. But after all, this is your happiness we're talking about. If anything deserves using extra powers of observation, the search for happiness certainly does. If anything deserves reflection on your actions, as you try to figure out what you're doing wrong so you can learn how to do it right, the search for happiness does. So the more you're open about the fact that, yes, you are searching for happiness, the more skillful the search is going to be. The more skillful the research, the more skillful the search, the more rewarding the outcome.